You know, what's interesting is that when people prepare for their journey into the next world, and they want to decide what they should leave to their children, what they should bequeath to their children. So the discussion or the thoughts always focus on
material
money. And for my child, the one thing, you know, the third child, I want you to get the gold ring. And to my daughter, I want you to have silverware that I always loved. And my son should have the bookshelves, you know, and so on and so forth. And I'm not going to say that that's unimportant. But anytime you talk about the idea of a will, the first thing everyone thinks about is money. Who's going to get what? When in reality, that's probably the least important thing you bequeath to your children, or your loved ones, or what have you. What's the more important thing? And I think this is something that a lot of people don't do or neglect to do, is to leave what's called an ethical will. You know, a communication of what was important to you. Now, some could suggest that, well, if they didn't get it in your lifetime, a piece of paper ain't going to do it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think that if there are certain things that you say, these are things that are important to me, these are values that I'm communicating to you are important, there's a certain value in that has a certain impact that I think cannot be overlooked. And I think that's something that Shlomo, that David, at least on paper, we see David does for Shlomo.
You don't think living a life by example is a better Yerusha than finally saying at the end of my life, well, I should have...
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I think you have to live a life by example.
Right.
But then there's value in also saying, listen, I want to point out to you that I did X, Y, and Z, and that these things were important to me. Now, if you lived your life as a crook and then you say to your children, oh, by the way, always be honest in business. Yeah, thanks, Dan. Appreciate mm-hmm. that. But if you say, if you live your life as an honest and meticulous person and you say to your children, I want you to know I sacrificed to live my life as an honest and a meticulous person, and I gave up a lot, but that was one of the most important things in my life, and it's important to me that my children follow through on that. Is that not an important and valuable message?
It's important, but people wouldn't write that in their will.
Why not?
I don't know. I can't imagine.
You have a lawyer. Again, you think of will as a legal document that has to do with last will and testament. So what is a will? What is it? It's a statement of your final wishes. So you're right, it doesn't have to be in the actual document. First of all, I think it's more powerful if it is. Mm-hmm. Why? Because it's not just about the money, what Dad would have wanted us to have. It's what Dad tells us what he wants us to be. And then Dad can say what he wanted us to have. And I think that's a much more powerful message. But even more than that, I think there's a lot to be said for it doesn't have to be the same document, it could be a different document. You know, see the ethical will that I left for you. What ethical will? What message is important to you? You know, and I think that's something that would be worthwhile for people to invest their time and their energy in. It's an important thing. And you'll see what I mean as we read through it. Perek Beis in Bet, chapter 2 in Malachi. So David knew that his days were numbered. So what does he command his son Shlomo? I'm going in the way of the land. I'm going to die. He knows it. V'chazakta v'hayita l'ish. Chazakta, be strong and be a man. Now, why is he telling Shlomo be a man?
He's not a man.
He's a kid. You have to say, Shlomo, in a sense, what he's saying is, I would have loved to have lived a little longer to help you grow up. You could imagine the pressures of, how old is Shlomo at the time?
Yeah, 12.
17. What? I thought either 12 or 14. Yeah, I thought 12. Could you imagine a 12-year-old kid with the pressures, as we're going to see, and the... and the influences, and David made him king. Great. What's everybody else saying? Think about it. David announced Shlomo was going to be the king, and there was a whole ceremony, and they said, Yechi HaMelech Shlomo, wonderful, and everybody, you know, celebrates. And what appears in the political columns in the Jerusalem Free Press the next day?
Who's this kid? Who are the
experience?
Yeah. Right, not even bar mitzvah.
His father must have been really going senile to do this.
King appoints.
He appoints his 12-year-old. He's got other sons. What's the matter with him?
King appoints a daughter of beloved wife to fulfill a promise he made. Right, whatever, you know. Right? All it does is it dredges up all those terrible things. Okay, now David says, oh, and by the way, Solomon, even though, you know, I don't read the morning papers, A, and B, I wish I could help you see ya.
Be a man.
Be a man. You got to be a man. And that's a tremendous amount of pressure. That's trial by fire for a 12-year-old. Man, kid, boy, whatever you want to call it. B'shamarta, so this is what he says, et mishmeret Hashem Elokecha, v'alecha bidrachav, Mishmor chukotav, mitzvotav, mishpatav, ve'edvotav, kakatub b'Torat Moshe. First thing he says to him, be a man. Okay, what does it mean to be a man?
Follow the law.
Keep the Torah. I mean, is that, you know?
Wow.
What a powerful statement. And it doesn't just say keep the Torah. Follow in its ways, guard its commandments, and its mitzvot, and its statutes, and its testimonies that are written in the Torat Moshe. Do exactly what the Torah says. Lamaan taskil eight asher ta'aseh. So that's taskil. What is taskil?
That's clever.
Sheichel. What's not cleverness? What's sheichel? Intelligence. You should have sheichel to know what to do. How does a leader know have the sheichel, have the proper sheichel to know what to do?
Right.
By studying the Torah. In a sense, right, to keeping the Torah. So what do you do? I mean, there are always these situations where the Torah does not instruct. The king of Persia is attacking. What should I do? Right? The people are complaining. The sewers are backed up. What do I do? So what does the Torah say about backed up sewers?
Nothing.
But everything. Because one who studies the Torah understands, and if you study it and you delve into it, that there's an ethic to the Torah. There's a worldview that the Torah gives a person, and each person is influenced in their own way. But if they're properly imbued with the values of Torah, then they can tell you what to do when the drains get stopped up and there are all these competing factors and Persia's attacking. But if you don't have the values of the Torah, then what influences the decisions that you make? Popular perception, world pressure, influence of powerful people. So now they tell you, you know, the world wants you to make peace. Would you give up, oh, I don't know, Harabayit?
Oh,
in
sure,
theory?
In the name of peace?
In theory?
In the name of
well, works for me.
Yes, Condoleezza Rice.
There's a lot of pressure. No. What does the Torah have to say about that?
Who will be his confidant? Who is he going to talk to?
What do you mean?
Well, he has to have somebody to lead him.
Anyway, he has a Navi, he has a spiritual guide, the Navi to rebuke him in a sense. But the Navi only rebukes him if he does something drastically wrong, I would say. If he really goes off
the test. Do we know how much time went by from Perek Aleph to Perek Bet?
I don't know. I think it was not a lot. That's my sense. Because remember, David is already an invalid when Shlomo is picked. So how long could it have been? Okay. But, and I think that's what Torah is saying. Leman tashkil. If you want to have the seichel to know, eight kol asher ta'asher, the eight kol asher tifnesam, everywhere, where to turn and what to do, you have to learn. You have to learn the Torah, you have to follow the mitzvot of the Torah, because they will guide you. They will lead you, they will give you a path. Now, there's a fine line, by the way. What does it sound like I'm advocating? Interestingly enough, what is that? There's a concept today. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It's called the Das Torah. Mm-hmm. What's Das Torah?
Knowledge.
No, you ever heard this term? It's a very important term.
Das Torah is that you go according to what the age of.
Correct. For what?
For big decisions.
Not for everything?
For everything.
Okay.
But it depends to what degree you take Das Torah. Right, so you could take that to a certain extent and say, should I buy the house or should I not buy the house? Should I take the job? Should I not take the job? Should I switch careers? Should I not switch careers?
It's like going to the Rebbe. He has enough to go.
What? So that's a very interesting question. Now, forget the Lubavitcher Rebbe to get a bracha. I'm not talking about a Rebbe bracha.
No, the decision about should I buy this house or not,
right,
this job or not.
Right.
People would go to the Lubavitcher Rebbe and get his tefillah.
His eitzah. Right. So, but
that's not Das Torah.
Well. Right. Is it an eitzah, or are you asking what to do? And those are very, very different things. So very often people, you know, even in my lowly state, will call me and say, "Oh, I'd like to bounce something off of your, off of you." And okay. I'm pretty careful. I never tell people what to do. It's not my place to tell people what to do. You should do this.
But you can guide them and say, "Well, you might find an answer this way, or in my experience, this might work."
I would say that. Or I would say, these are your options, but this is going to be what I believe the outcome of that decision. You know, somebody called me yesterday and said, I wouldn't do it. Okay, it's fine, and you could take that, but I'm not going to tell you what you should do or what you have to do. And I think that's the line. That's what he says. Eman taskil eit kol asher ta'aseh, that which you should do. I don't think that there's, when people come to making ritual decisions, is the pot treif or the pot kosher? There are yes and no answers to that question. Pot treif, you have to kosher it. So then you ask another question. Should I have chicken soup tonight or mushroom barley?
Only Friday night is chicken.
What's the answer to that question? Could I give you a halachic answer?
No.
I sure could.
What did you eat did you eat an hour ago?
Could I?
Yes.
Well, now you're milchus of pleasure. Well, if you save the chicken soup, there's an element of covered Shabbos to it, and what about the cholesterol and the health value? Versus, you can start making things up. I can give you an answer. But what's the real answer? What do you want? Why are you asking me this question? You understand what I'm saying? So I think that it could be taken too far. There is such a thing as, I believe, taking it too far, asking too many questions. I think a spiritual guide is important to help you evaluate and be able to know and make decisions, but not to make decisions for you.
To use
chachma
to make your
decision. Okay. But, so that Hashem will fulfill his message. I shared the bear alai more that he said, saying, "Im yismeru banecha et darkam lalechad lefanai be'emet b'chol levavamu b'chol nafsham." If your children will follow before me in truth with all their hearts and with all their souls, le'mor lo yikaret lecha'ish me'al kisei Yisrael. I'm guaranteeing you. Follow the Torah and we're good. We're in with Flynn. But if you don't, what's the idea? Then we're done. Then the Davidic line is in big trouble, is in jeopardy.
Isn't this a little troublesome coming from David?
Why?
Because he didn't exactly do this, did he not?
1 second. I think, aren't you being a little unfair?
Huh?
Why, because of Bathsheba, you mean?
Yeah.
What other example are you going to give me?
I don't know.
See, this is the problem with David and Bathsheba. The Midrash says that the Gemara says David begged God to leave the story out. He begged him. And because Baruch Hu says, it happened. It's got to be in the book. Sorry. So here he is. He's a spiritual. He's a military leader. He's religious. He's firm. He's devoted to the Rosh Hashanah. I mean, really devoted. And he made a terrible mistake. And what happened because of that mistake?
Everything.
He paid. I mean, the whole second half of Shmuel Bet is the price he paid for that one terrible mistake that he made. And so for the rest of his life, he paid for that mistake. He kept coming back to bite it. He never lived down that mistake. But can you say that it's hypocritical of him to say keep the Torah?
No.
That's exactly my point.
Other people, maybe a lesser man, would have said, "Okay, that's the way you feel about it. Forget it. Leave me alone. Get me out of here. I'm not interested."
I just think it's not fair. Who is fault free?
Nobody.
You know, say, "Oh, that's too big of a mistake." At what point do you, which he did Shuva especially. So at what point do you say, "Well, that mistake is so big that any lesson you tell me is hypocritical"? At what point do you say that? And what's the answer to that question? Never. What's the best proof of that example? Aaron. What mistake did Aaron make?
Oh,
he built an Egel HaZahav at Har Sinai. Right? And he became the model. He became the impetus and the instigator of Tshuva for the Jewish people for the rest of the world. Right. I know, tshuva though. He's a Kohen Gadol. You want to do tshuva, you have to go to the Kohen. You have to bring a korban. He became the person who got people to do tshuva. Why? I really think very strongly because they said, if he did that and kept that job, what I did, I turn the light on Shabbos. Right? It's not good, but I mean, come on. It ain't no chayna ego. Poor Alan. Okay. Pasuk, okay, next thing. So, and that, by the way, is the first thing. What's the first thing he says to Shlomo? He does not say, you will find, you know, a harmonica that I got from my father that I played always in the, you know, and that you give that to your brother, he always liked the harmonica. He doesn't say that. He doesn't even tell him about what? He doesn't even tell him about issues of the monarchy. First thing, keep the Torah. Have a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that will guide you in how to live your life, how to be a king, and that will make sure, it will guarantee what we want in the end. You know, how many people send that message to their children? First thing, keep the Torah. Yeah, I made mistakes in my life. Keep the Torah. That's what's important. I tried. First thing. Havagamata Yadata, next. Now he's going to move on to more national matters. Eit asher asali Yoav ben Zeruya. Asher asal ishnei sarei Yoav tibaot Yisrael Avner ben Ner ula amasha ben Yeter vayahargem vayasein demilchamam b'shalom. Okay, so you also know that which Yoav ben Zeruya did to me. What did he do to me? Asher asal ishnei sarei tibaot Yisrael, that which he did to the two military leaders, the two generals of Israel, Avner and Amasa. So what did he do to Abner? What did he do to Abner? Anyone? He killed him. Right. What did he do to Amasa? Killed him too. Why did he kill Abner? Who was Abner? It doesn't say in the commentary. What? Abner ben Ner. Right. Okay. No, nobody knows? Okay. Abner ben Ner was the general of Ish-bosheth, remember? And they wanted to make peace. And Yoav felt that as David was rising in power, and after Shaul had died, so David wanted to unite the people, and Yoav, instead, he went out and he waged war and he killed Abner ben Ner. What did he do to Amasa? Remember what happened after the story with Absalom? Yoav killed Absalom. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, by the way, that David did not mention Absalom. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Yoav killed Absalom. Fine. And then remember what happened afterwards, that David was trying to unite the people, bring them all together. He wanted to create unity. And because he was angry about Absalom, he demoted Yoav and he promoted Amasa. Amasa was the general of Absalom. Was he the general? No, Amasa? Yeah, I think he was. He wanted to unite the people. And so remember, what did he do? He pretended that he tripped. He put the sword in the wrong side, right? And he grabbed Amasa by the beard, pulled down, cut him up. And remember, he left him on the battlefield to die, and other people were running by. So they had to drag Amasa's body to the side so people wouldn't stop. Ringing a bell?
Yeah.
So, and Yoav had his reasons, if you recall. But David was never happy about that. By Yitain Jumei Milchama, and he gave back the blood of war, b'chagorato asher b'manah, with the belt on his loins, because he hid the knife in his belt, u'b'na'alo asher b'raglav. When he went to Avner, right, when he went to tie his shoe, right, oh, I've got to fix my shoe. Avner bent over to say, oh, you okay over there? And what does Yoav do? I'm fine. Oh, right. You're dead. We're going to come back to this pasuk just in a minute. So let's just finish. Ve'ashita k'chachmatcha. Do as your wisdom dictates. Ve'lo toreit seivato b'shalom sh'ol. And do not let him die a peaceful death. Meaning? Meaning what?
Don't let him live
to old age,
or don't
make the rest of his life miserable.
No, he shall not go down in debt in peace. Sheol. That's Sheol.
No,
How do you translate the scroll?
Grave, to the grave.
Sheol is a reference to the grave, but in context, it means do not let him descend to hell of old age. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, what in the world does David mean by that?
Get rid of
him. Kill him. Ah, 1 second. So it means a couple of things. Rashi says, I think Rashi or the Midrash, okay. Rashi, Vav, see Rashi on Vav. Velo Toreit Sheibato B'Shalom Sheol, you see on Vav? Mm-hmm. If he dies on his own, he's going to Gehenna. If you kill him, what's the implication? It'll be a kapara.
And he won't.
Right. Meaning Rashi, he gives David the most pure of motives. Here, Yoav, right, you know, he did terrible things. He killed Jewish people because of his own, you know, against my will, against the commandment of the king, for no reason, for reasons that I disagreed with. And if he doesn't pay for it, he's going to pay for it in the next world.
Why?
So David, in a sense, what Rashi turns David into, instead of saying, get him back, what he says is take care of him. Do him a favor. That's what Rashi says.
Why didn't David take care of him?
Ah, the multi-million dollar question. If David is so angry at Yoav, why doesn't he do it himself?
Well, at this point, he can't.
What? Take you out of the sheet. What do you mean he can't?
He's too old.
Oh, he's too old to make the command?
Oh, that's...
People will question it.
Well, actually, he can't. Well, why can't it, David?
He's out of the picture. He's not the king anymore.
What?
He's not the king anymore.
If he was, wait a second. If he feels that way now, he didn't feel that way, you know, 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
He didn't take care of it.
Right.
He didn't think it was time.
What do you mean? It's only time when he dies?
Well, he feels like it's close by. He wants to.
I understand, but if he's so mad at Yoav for what he did, have him killed. Anyone want to suggest an answer? Yes, what do you think?
Sounds like a repetition.
You understand the question?
It sounds like a repetition of something else that happened with got rid of Bathsheba's husband, didn't want him around, so got him killed.
Well, he did. I mean, he elevated him. He was the most, wasn't he?
He was. Was that him?
He put him at the head.
Who was the head of the army? Yoav was the head of the army. So what did David do after Yoav killed Absalom? What did David do after Yoav kills Absalom? He demotes Yoav and says, Amasa, you're in charge. What does Yoav do? He kills him. So why doesn't David take court-martial him right then and there? I think there's a very simple reason. What's the simple reason? Well, aside from the fact, he wants him killed now. It is his nephew. Why doesn't he do it? I think the answer is he can't. David is the commander in chief. So he says, arrest the joint chief of staff. Who has more loyalty? Who commands more loyalty? The king or the chief of staff of the army?
Chief of staff of the army.
And the answer is, that's not an easy question to answer. It's not necessarily so. What happens when he demotes Yoav? What does Yoav do? Right. If David were to say, Yoav, you're demoted. Hey, Frank, I want you to take the job. What would Frank have said?
No, thank you. No,
why?
Because he killed everybody.
That's been tried before. exactly. Who do you command to demote him? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's a very tenuous thing. It's a very tenuous thing. Did I mention it last week when Truman finally demotes MacArthur?
Right.
I mentioned that week, right? So what are the people saying? Oh my God, who is Truman? Truman is this corrupt, you know, hick from the Midwest, you know, who got in because he was the vice president, you know what I'm saying? And now all of a sudden he thinks
that he can get
he's the general, the great General MacArthur.
Who does he think he is?
It's a good thing, honestly. MacArthur said, okay. Because in a very real way, if we lived in a military society, MacArthur could honestly have said, you know what, Mr. Truman? I don't think so. I think I'm going to stick around. And then we'll see what happens. You know, and that has happened. So it's very easy for us to say, well, why did David do it himself? I believe that the simple answer is, couldn't do it. So now, with the change of leadership, when Shlomo becomes the king, it's a given that Shlomo will elevate his own people. Mm-hmm. He will have his faithful servant, not necessarily Yoav. And the people understand that. They readily know that. So Yoav now is in a position of weakness, not a position of strength. So now that David says to Shlomo, Asita kechachmatcha. Do what you think you need to do. Okay, now, let's go back. What is Asita kechachmatcha? Look at Radak. Radak says something very interesting. I think you all have Radak. Asita kechachmatcha. See Radak? Radak. On Pasuk Vav. Do as your wisdom tells you. What line is it? Do you find it?
That's right here.
Oh, it's in the wide. It's about 8 lines down. At the end of the line in the wide. In the wide. Sherry, you got it?
In the wide lines,
yeah, at the end of the line in the red dot.
Yeah, he keeps going down.
It keeps going down. It starts thin, and then it gets wider and wider and wider.
It's like 7.
The end of the line is the wide line. The end of the line.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
In the middle on the left side. Mm-hmm. Type.
Yeah.
Up there.
Are you on the right page? Yeah.
Yeah. A little higher. There you go. Okay. So that's Radak. Kilomar. Meaning. Don't kill him until you find something wrong with him. Even though he's really Chayav Misa. Mm-hmm. Why? So why should you wait? Because he fought wars for God. The Tobogim Se'ubo. And he's a good guy, or there were good things about him. Ella, Shaharag Le'emes, Nehasarim Chinam. But he killed these two guys for nothing. Lefikach, therefore, Ta'asher Kechat Chamatcha. Use your wisdom. Shetivyeu Lidei Avla. You should, how should I say this? Bring him to the situation where he does something wrong. Vashiva Shitchayev Hariga. What's the legal term for that, Ms. Foreman?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No.
What's the legal term for getting someone to do something wrong and then getting them in trouble for doing wrong? No, not coercion. It's called entrapment.
Conspiracy.
Right. Get him to do something that's inappropriate and then...
Arrest him.
What does that sound like, by the way? What does that sound like in the Navi? What other story does that sound like? See, I don't like reduction shot for a very simple reason. What does it sound like?
Get somebody to get.
You use your wisdom to find a city. He's a nice guy. Well, I mean, you know, he really deserves to die. But, you know, he's fine. He's a war hero. He's a, you know, whatever. So, find a situation where he'll mess up and kill him for that. And trap him. What does that sound like?
To me, it
sounded like exactly what David did to Uriah.
Sent him to war.
Right? Yeah, sent him to war, and then said, what do you do?
Put him in the front.
Pull back. Put it there. You don't have to kill him. Put him in a situation where he'll die. Mm-hmm. That doesn't sound very... The reason I don't like the Radak's shot is, to me, it doesn't smack of Davidicness. I mean, why does the David just say, have him killed? Why does the David say, I want you to have him killed?
Because then, wouldn't Shlomo, he'd question it. Why? What did he do?
No, he told him what he did. He said, he killed these two guys. So why doesn't he say, Shlomo, have him killed? Why does he have to say it in a roundabout way? V'yashita techat macha. Use your brain. Do your...
Because he can't tell him to kill.
Why not? Why not? Isn't he telling him?
Because it's his responsibility.
So we'll have him killed now.
How is that going to look? He's going to start his kingship. He's going to start. The first thing he's going to do is have this guy killed. He's part of the army. He's had the support of the army.
Well, we're going to see. That's exactly... Does David want him dead?
Yes.
So why doesn't he just say, kill him? Does he want that Shlomo to stall?
Yes.
No. He says, Asita kachat
macha. Right.
So why doesn't he say, David, kill Yoav? Why doesn't he say it? Just come out and say it. If that's what you want, Dad, fine. Tell me what you want, and I'll be happy to do it.
I just
want to
scare him.
You can't tell somebody to kill somebody.
Sure can.
Not only that, what about all the people who saw that he did this and he's never been punished?
Who, Yoav?
Yeah.
Yoav knows something's coming. But as we'll soon see. I think the answer is, I was thinking about this, David doesn't want Shlomo to do it for him. He wants, at least in some way, that Shlomo will realize that this is what he needs to do for himself.
That's why he keeps stressing. Do
what you need to do. Understand. Use your wisdom. Figure it out. When you have a rogue military leader like that, who could control me, that's never a good thing. So I could tell you to kill him, but I'm not going to tell you to kill him. Do what you think is right. When you tell a child, if you tell the child, you know, I don't want you to go to that concert, so you're not going. So the child doesn't go. Of what value is it for the child not going to that concert? What lesson was learned?
Nothing.
If you say, you know, I don't think that the people that are going to be there are your kind of people, and I don't think you should go, but I'm not going to stop you. You have to do what you think is appropriate. Mm-hmm. So you make a risk. The risk is
that he's going to go anyway.
Yes, and I can go. Bye.
But you're hoping that he has enough.
But when that child makes the decision on their own not to go,
that's a huge lesson.
It's huge. Shlomo, David
seems
knows,
like a huge burden to be putting on.
David knows.
A little gallant.
Yeah.
Right, David, it seems like
that's exactly the point. David knows.
He has to grow up fast. He's got to grow up fast.
You know, what happens the next time, the next thing that comes up? Well, I knew what to do with Yoav. Why? Because Dad told me what to do. Now what? Go, Dad. So he's trying, I think what David is doing very wisely is this, you know, we're going to say, do what you think is right. Use your brain. Do it in a wise way. That's a very, very powerful message to a young child starting out. I'm trusting you. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I want you to figure it out on your own. And if your father trusted you for that, after that decision, everything else is...
You're going to laugh at me.
Yeah.
It's a great... You know what this just reminds me? All of a sudden, I just saw this. I have in The King and I. At the end, you know, the king, he's dying, he's sitting there, and he has this young little fisher who has to make up, you know, he's now going to be the king, transfer of power.
Yeah.
And he keeps turning to his father, what should I do? Do you think that these people should bow to me? He says, what are you asking me? You make the decision. What do you want?
Right.
And he starts and makes the first steps. I don't want anybody to bow to me. No, I think he comes up with some kind of crazy little, I don't know, I think every day we should have ice cream or whatever. But you see all of a sudden that he starts to use his wisdom, and the king is lying there dying, and nobody sees him dying because they're all paying attention to this young boy. But he suddenly was given that, he was empowered
right.
to make his own decisions, and that's exactly what this is.
Okay, let's go back to the pasuk before for a minute. It says, V'gam atayadat, the pasuk hey.
V'gam atayadat.
Yeah, I gotta go faster. Am I dragging too slow?
No,
it's
great.
This is
fine.
Okay. V'gam et asher asal Yoav ben Tzruya, asher asal l'shnei sharei tzivot Yisrael l'avner b'ner l'amasa ben yeter v'yar gein. There's a problem. What's the linguistic problem with that pasuk? Et asher asal li Yoav ben Tzruya. You also know that which Yoav ben Tzruya did to me. Asher asal l'shnei sharei tzivot Yisrael. That which he did to the two generals of Israel. So what's the problem? The problem is, what did Yoav do? Did he do it to David, or did he do it to them? So now, what's the simple answer to that question?
Well, it affected.
Right, when they killed the two generals, it affected David as well. But there's something else. The Midrash says something else, something very interesting. Midrash, look at source number 2 that I have for you. We're going to go back to source number 1 in a few minutes, okay? Eit asher asal Yoav ben Tzruya. Asher asal v'shnei tzarei tzivot Yisrael. So the Midrash asks, source number 2, ma asalo? What did he do to him? Midrash says, at Moshe, I'll tell you what he did. B'sha'a shekatav David lo Yoav, when David wrote to Yoav, havu et Uriah el mul p'nei ha-milchama ha-chazaka, b'sha'av t'ami achara v'nakev ha-meit. Right? Do me a favor, push Uriah to the front, and you guys pull back, and he should be killed. So when David sent that secret, super top secret message to Yoav, to his top general, Asakaf, Yoav did it, v'nehrag, Uriah was killed. So everybody in the platoon, all of the Giborim, remember, by the way, remember the description we learned at the end of Shmuel about the Giborim? Apparently these Giborim were like tough, I mean strong, and they didn't get killed. And when they saw, you could imagine, by the way, imagine if you're in a firefight and your commanding officer intentionally, it's clear what he does. He says, Uriah, go up to the front. Okay, all men pull back. Without radioing to Uriah, without telling him anything. You know what that does to military morale? You know what that does to you know, if you're in that group, you know, what's the odds the next time your CO says, hey, Frank, you take lead position. Forget it. Like the whole point of a military leadership is, A, you have to follow orders, but the reason you must follow orders is because you trust the leader ahead of you. You trust the person giving you the orders. And there's some good reason. So here, they see Uriah got killed. What did we accomplish? What was our mission? What did we do? Answer? Nada. Somebody kapsu, kol hachayalim ha-yoav lahargo. Chayar rosh ha-gibarim. They wanted to kill Yoav. What did you do? Haralahem etaktar. So he showed them the letter. And he says to them, don't blame me, don't blame me. I was just following orders. What should he have said? What should you have said? Soldiers, you follow orders. None of your business. I have my reasons. I'm the commanding officer. You don't like it?
Tough.
But instead, what does Yoav do?
Wasn't my fault.
Shifts the blame. That's what David means when he says, "Eight Asher Asali Yoav ben Tzibriah." Not only did Yoav kill Avner and kill Amasa, he ratted me out too, and everybody knew it. Okay, that's why it says, "Ulafika Katuf." This is what the Rashi was quoting: "Eight Asher Asali Yoav ben Tzibriah." He commanded him to kill him. Why? Which is his nephew. He said what he did was, so he did some pretty despicable things. And if you don't kill him, he'll never make it to Gan Eden. So he loved him so much that he wanted him to be killed.
That's, wait a second, that's really crazy logic.
In a sense,
you kill him so that he'll get Gan Eden? No, I don't buy it.
Talk to the rabbis of the Midbar Rabba. Oh,
okay, I guess I'm going to have to. They're going to have to explain it better to me, Lucy.
What? You don't understand that? Well, you think that in this world, that everything that happens in this world, you know, if you live a good life, everybody thinks that they want to live a good life. Everything should be good, never suffer, no pain, no bother.
No, but so, this...
David is saying to him, if he lives a life of peace in this world, and he doesn't pay for his sins in this world,
He'll pay for them in the next world.
We take the broad view of things. If you didn't take the broad view of things, then suffering would have no meaning at all. Right? That's what we say. Why do people suffer? Well, we hope it. Even we don't want to suffer. But if we suffer, it's a kapara. Don't we say that?
Yeah. But wait.
So in the end, I mean, by the way, I was just learning this mission with my son.
Yeah.
So the mission in Bracha says, you know, Misha Mevarech Al Hatov. You know what we say to him? You know, he says, he blesses God for the good. Neshatkin also. We tell him, Shah, quiet. Uh-huh. Why? Because the Mishnah says, Kashem Shem Mevarech Al Hatov, Tach Mevarechim Al Haram. Just like you bless God for the good, you have to bless God for the bad.
True.
Because that which you think is bad also came from Ribbono Shel Olam. But you think only the good things that you like happened to you because God had influence, but everything else that you didn't like, that wasn't Yad Hashem? Then he was like, he was busy looking the other way? Doesn't work that way.
Yeah, but this is a real whopper to kill him so that he'll get all of them back.
Yeah? You and I don't make those decisions. That's what the Midrash says. He had it coming. He deserves it for what he did. I could never give it to him. You know, by the way, if a person's chai of mita,
right?
When the Beit Din gives him misha,
right?
What does it say? Misha mechaperes. It's a kapara. So if the Beit Din can't give him misha, There's no kapara. So who's doing whom a favor?
So kill him, you'll do him a favor. Weird way of justifying. But it's...
Well, I don't understand, Miriam. I really don't understand.
Okay.
Let's say a person... don't we agree that there are things, Judaism says,
yeah,
that there are things that are far more valuable than human life?
Absolutely.
Correct. Far more valuable. The problem is we live in a culture today where human life is the ultimate value.
Right, and that's wrong.
Right, and when human life becomes the ultimate value, then anything that brings life is good, anything that takes away life is bad. That's not the culture, the values that we live by. Pasuk Zion. I want you to treat with kindness the children of Barzilai. Why? Remember, Absalom was running away. You don't remember. You were very young. Maybe
you weren't born.
No, I think he was born. He was born as a kid. Okay? Nonetheless, we pay back our debts.
Mm-hmm.
And remember the guy, what did Shimi ben Gera do? Everybody remember? Shimi ben Gera, you gotta know that name. David is running away from Absalom. And he's walking out of Yerushalayim on foot.
Oh.
And as he's walking out, there's a man named Shimi ben Gera. He was from the tribe of Binyamin. And what did he do?
He's cursing him.
Oh, he's cursing him, and he's letting him have it with every piece of language that he knows.
All barrels.
Okay? He cursed me some good curses. How do they translate it in school? And he cursed me.
A powerful curse.
Powerful curse. He didn't hold back, you know? And by the way, the Navi says, he didn't just curse him. Remember, he was like throwing rocks at them.
Stones.
He was like on the ledge above, and they're walking, and he's like throwing dirt on them and throwing rocks at them. And they said, David, what should we do? Should we kill him? And David said, no. David saw that as part of his kapara. And then, remember, on the way back, Shimei comes up and he says, my king! And what did David say? I won't kill you. But why didn't David kill Shimei at the time? He didn't kill him because it wasn't a time for killing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's a time for unity. You know, this is also, I'll give my only Lincoln reference. What was Lincoln's maskana? Very interesting. What was Lincoln's, when at the end of the Civil War, what did he do to all of the, pretty much every one of the Civil War, you know, generals and warriors and even the people that fought? What was their punishment? He pardoned them all. He said, as long as you swear an allegiance to the Union, right, you're off the hook. There was a certain, Lincoln had a very wonderful way of saying things. There was a certain agitator who, he used to make raids on his river raids and, you know, caused the Union tremendous problems during the war. I'm tired of the Civil War reference.
No.
I'm just tired. I don't remember his name. There was a message that he was running away to Canada and they could track him down. They were going to be able to catch him. And they asked Lincoln, what should we do? So Lincoln said, when an elephant is running away, it's best not to grab onto his hind leg. Yeah. It was very, like, chacham. So the same thing was with Shimei ben Gera. They just had a bitter civil war, a war with Absalom. And Shimei ben Gera and David is trying to unify. What message does it send to unify the people if the one guy who doesn't, I don't like, kill him? There's no unity then. Right? There's no way to bring people together. But yet, what is Shimei did something that was totally, totally beyond the pale, unacceptable. He was just lucky circumstantially that David didn't want to kill him at the time. So I swore to him in God's name, I swore to him, he got me to swear that I wouldn't kill him, so I can't.
Mm-hmm. That's a list of people he's got to kill.
Al Tanakehu. I can't. You can't. You're a smart boy. And you know what to do. Again,
same thing.
Right. Now, it is interesting to note, I never saw a Midrash saying that David was concerned that Shimi should get Olam Haba. You know, you don't see the Midrash saying that, oh, he was so worried about his Olam Haba that he wanted to kill him because of whatever. All right, you know, nonetheless. So David gave commandments about three things. One, Yoav, the children of Barzillai, and Shimei ben Gera. Everything else. Well, what do I do about the economy? Yeah, it'll work out. Military? That'll be fine. He covered Ir David. He was buried in Ir David. Where is Ir David?
Why is that?
Isn't it
outside the old city? Near the Siloam, isn't it?
Well, it's outside the walls of what they call
the. They think nowadays, didn't they think some lady, our archaeologist, thinks that she found Ir David?
Yeah.
But it's in, there's a neighborhood that when you go to the Kotel,
yeah,
you can look down, looking, I think it's
12?
East, west, put them on the western wall. South. Right, looking south. Like if you walk down that ramp out to the Kotel, mm-hmm, out of the gate there.
I toured it. I think.
And there's a ravine, and then and there's an Arab neighborhood on the other side. I think down there, that's where she thinks Ir David is. That's what she thinks it is. And she found like all kinds of nifty stuff. I'm sorry, but of course, we all know, of course, it's all a Jewish fabrication.
Right.
And we never had any claims to the temple. Man. There was never any temple anyway. Yeah, it's all rumor.
Right, they found, I heard on the news this morning that they found, theoretically, an untouched site from dating back from the first temple.
Really?
An untouched archaeological site, because they finally allowed the antiquities, finally allowed somebody to come in and investigate them there.
Where?
On the Kotel, where they're doing the
excavations on Harbite. Very nice. Okay, Malach David al Yisrael 40 shana. So David was king 40 years. Bechavon Malach 7 shanim. Ob Yerushalayim Malach 33 shanim.
Okay.
7 years in Hebron, 33 years in Yerushalayim. Yes, ma'am.
That's
seven
it
and a half
for David's death?
What
That's
do you mean?
It. I mean,
oh, you want the funeral?
No, that's all that they say. Okay, he's that's it. I don't know. Shouldn't there have been a little more pageantry? Shouldn't there have been a little more something written about him that, you know?
I understand what you're saying. I mean, when Saul, but it's interesting. When Saul died, who eulogizes him?
David.
David does.
But there's nothing.
You imagine there was a funeral.
But there's no mention. It's just.
I don't know. Let me look at Jupiter. I mean, see if there's anything. But
here, you're a wise man.
Yeah.
Now he's dead.
Ushlomo yashav al kisei David, Aviv, Vatikon malchuto ma'on. And his kingdom was exceedingly vatikon. What's the word vatikon? From what word?
Vatik.
No, vatikon. No, that's a kuf. Tikon. From what word, Dora? From vatikon? Nachon. Right, nachon. How did I translate it in the scroll? It was exceedingly nachon.
Firmly established.
Correct. Okay, it was exceedingly proper. I think if I saw somebody, Rashi, no. Atikon ma'achuto ma'od, maybe the Mitzuda, okay? Because the Mitzuda says it wasn't like David, that he was chased, and he had to run around.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Shlomo had a peaceful kingdom. The rest of his kingdom, David had sacrificed and suffered and gone through all the terrible things. And Shlomo reaped the benefits of it. Now, we're going to see that he reaped the benefits of all too much, but nonetheless, all of the pains that David went through paid off in the fact that Shlomo had a level of peace, and that peace was able to allow him to really solidify the country, and also, as we'll see, build the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, so we'll continue with the beginning of Mahal Shlomo next time.